Hello everyone, I'm Harry Bucknell. Thank you for downloading this podcast from ABF, the Soldiers Charity. In 2015, to further enhance communication up and down the ranks, and to bring it in line with the Royal Navy, the Royal Marines, and the Royal Air Force, the post of Command Sergeant Major was introduced to the British Army, giving commanders a brigade, division and above a key figure to advise them on all issues relating to the soldiers under their command. A mouthpiece to ensure that the voice of the other ranks is heard at the highest level and the general's will and intent is understood at the lowest level. With 350 successful years without this addition to the chain of command, many might question the need. So who better to discuss the matter in this edition of General Talk than the Senior Warrant Officer of the British Army, the Army Sergeant Major, Warrant Officer Class 1, Gavin Payton of the Rifles, who met me at Army Headquarters in Andover. It was, shall we say, an interview which began with a difference. Okay, so we are going to start this interview again. And I should explain the reason why we're starting the interview again is because I, as the interviewer, did not press the correct record button. I reminded my guest, who is Army Sergeant Major Gavin Payton, that the reason why you have Sergeant Majors in the Army is because they make sure that officers don't screw up. So, Gavin, or Sergeant Major, welcome to General Talk. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Pleasure.
You finished your time as Regiment and Sergeant Major of 3rd Battalion of the Rifles in Edinburgh in 2017, and you then, slightly bizarrely, commissioned as a captain. Can you talk me through how that came about and why you decided to accept the appointment of Army Sergeant Major?
So as the commissioning window opened for me, I did the selection course, and I didn't know what the result was until a little bit later down the line, by which point I'd been selected by the Army to be the first British soldier to go to the Command Sergeant Major Academy in America for a while with my family. So I didn't know what was going to happen. So I kind of figured that the Army would be taking me in a direction which wouldn't lead me to being a traditional LE immediately. So it was a little bit up in the air. But it was an unbelievable experience. And from there, I picked up to be the first Field Army Sergeant Major working for Field Army and another Rifleman, General Sanders.
Now, I think it's fair to say that you didn't quite commission in the standard way that perhaps people might expect. Where was it announced that you actually got your commission?
Yeah, so the process was exactly the same. I've never worn a captain's rank slide, although, you know, I've done nearly 4 years. I was actually told I commissioned when I was in the Grand Canyon on a field trip with the American Army as part of my course.
As you would do.
Yeah. I went out for an early morning run around the north rim of the Grand Canyon. I then came back, saw the WhatsApp from my division. Unbelievable day, and partied the following day in Las Vegas with all of my international mates.
I have sort of visions slightly of National Lampoon's Vacation, but I'm sure that's not the case. So your first position was as Field Army Sergeant Major to General Sanders. You described that as being a difficult position because you were the first in post. One of the things that does surprise me is that in an army that's so much smaller than it was when I first joined, is that you think that it would be easier to communicate than it seems to be. What is the role of a command sergeant major as opposed to a regimental sergeant major?
So I think, in any of these command sergeant major roles, I break this down into three main categories. So I'm a courier, I'm a thermometer, and I'm a translator. So I'm a courier because I carry the message up and down the chain, from generals into soldiers. I'm a thermometer because I measure the temperature of the army or the formation that you're looking after, and I feed that back into the generals. And I'm a translator because I translate the strategic narrative into something which is easily understandable at a tactical level. But more importantly, I do that the other way around. I take the tactical level information and I translate that into something that our general officers understand and act on.
The inference from that is that before that was the case, perhaps the generals weren't getting the message correctly or being able to feed down. That doesn't necessarily
speak too high of our generalship. What is your comment on that?
So this is one thing which I've battled with for the last few years. And, you know, I'm very lucky and I see just how much our generals care. Mm. They are unbelievably hardworking people who have got nothing but the best for soldiers at the forefront of their mind. It's just never seen before. And I'm very privileged to, you know, I sit next to CGS and he gives me complete freedom of the army. But it allows a window for the rest of the army to peek into through me as that window. So now I'm starting to demonstrate to the army exactly what the generals are doing on the soldiers' chain. And I'm demonstrating to the generals what our soldiers think from the soldiers.
You could argue that the chain of command worked right beforehand, but obviously it needed something to extra grease the wheels, so to speak. Is that your view?
Yeah, maybe. So CGS works in strategy. I don't work in strategy. Mm. So he will decide what goes where in the world, and I will make sure that the people in the back are looked after. Mm. And I'll make sure that they understand what's happening. So I don't do strategy. I look after people. Mm. The chain of command always works, absolutely. Mm. And what I don't do is circumvent it. I complement it, but I can also use some of my OR ignorance to unblock blockages and to break down some barriers.
Great stories placed on the fact that you commissioned as a captain, and again with your predecessor, Sergeant Major Horton. But previously, with people such as Garrison Sergeant Major Mason, I always knew they had a shadow rank, but play wasn't made of that. Do you think that acknowledgement to your real rank, your shadow rank, is important in your acceptance in your role today within the Army currently?
Absolutely not. Mm. And I think if I had a magic wand and I could wave it, I'd remove the commission from this completely. Mm. But there's I've tried to do that and it's far too complicated. Way harder than I thought it would be.
I suppose it's a bit like the atom bomb. Once it's invented, it's quite hard to uninvent it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. But it's hugely important, I believe, and I would say this, wouldn't I, that we have soldiers that are privileged enough to work at this level, because we can ensure that soldiers understand what's happening.
Mm. No, I can understand that. I mean, having been an adjutant and company commander, you rely heavily on your warrant officers. They are the yin to your yang, or the yang to your yin, whichever you look at it. And it is that mix and match that makes the system work. However, I think there's something like, in the Army today, there's something like 280 warrant officer class ones. Does that not seem to you being very top-heavy?
No, I don't think so. When you look at the amount of soldiers that we have, and, you know, RSMs 30, 40, 50 years ago are very different to what we have now.
Very much so.
And, you know, we are so much more. And I had my conference last week, and I'm saying to the RSMs, 300 of them, please, you know, remember you are much more than guard mounts and fire orders. Mm. I want you to be involved in G1, 3, 5, 7. Mm. I want you to be the master coach, the senior soldier, and the, you know, not just a regimental duty advisor to your commanding officer. Mm. You need to be much more dynamic. Mm. And so the RSM now is very, very different, and we're taking it in a different direction. Not trying to blur the lines between officers and soldiers. Mm. That's absolutely not what this is about. But it is about ensuring that our RSMs have someone to go to outside of the battalion. Mm. Whereas before, to speak to brigade, you'd have to speak to a brigade commander. Yep. And RSM's not going to do that.
My experience was that the relationship between your sergeant major and yourself was as close as it was between your platoon sergeant. And I'm surprised that in some cases that's not the case. But then obviously different units have different ways of doing it. You're now at the very top of the W1's tree. You are. You're the kingpin. You're the main man. What is the career progression after this?
Yes, sir. That's a really good question.
Look at this as your letter to Father Christmas.
So having a soldier at this level, it enables me to speak to the people who can make change, and to look at options which are potentially could be on the table. I've networked hard in this job internationally with people all over the world to see what more we can do for soldiers. So you think about officers, we've got them all over the world in key appointments. How many soldiers do we have around the world in key appointments? Not many. So I'm trying to shift soldiers into that space too. What will I do? Well, I think I'll probably go to staff college after this. I think I'll hang up my soldier's rank slide. I'll pick up a major's rank slide. I'll go to staff college, prove that I can operate at that level with, or try and operate with, you know, some of our best and brightest majors, and then I'll move into a staff job somewhere, wherever the army wants me. I think it's key to say at this stage, the army owes me nothing, and I will do whatever the army wants because I owe the army everything.
I mean, but it will be very hard after this great job, and also being regimental sergeant major of your own battalion too. It'll be quite a different thing when suddenly you've got to make your own cup of tea.
So it's you know, I've had a gifted career path. I never thought when I joined the army 23 years ago that I would end up being the sergeant major of the army. You know, the job is unbelievable, but it comes with a lot of pressure and a lot of stress too. You know, I've got to try and satisfy the chief of the general staff right the way through to you know, people looking to join the army, and then all the bits in between, media, etc. So there is nothing that will top this job without a shadow.
I can imagine. I'd like to talk now about the rifles. You joined the light infantry.
Yes.
And you then amalgamated into the rifles. That's one of the great success stories of the 2000s amalgamations. What was the key factor to that success, that amalgamation?
I think it was acceptance, and not trying to continue to be something different or a facet of that group. You know, from the day we amalgamated, we all became riflemen, all of us, regardless of where our antecedent regiment. And I think, you know, the brand is, you know, the thinking behind the branding was exceptional, because the brand is very powerful and very strong. But everyone's grabbed it and moved forward. Hey, so, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, some banter between red coats and green jackets and stuff like that. But I very rarely see any of that at all now.
I gather there's some problem about you wearing a red mess jacket. I've just put that in. Amongst your own riflemen, I gather that you won't be seen in a photograph, is that correct?
It's so I went down to... So I don't know who you've been speaking to, but I've got a good idea. I went at the RSM's convention last year. There was a bunch of rifles RSMs. They were all there, and I walked over and said, "Hey, lads, let's get a photograph." Mm-hmm. And one of them said to me, "Gav, no chance." I was like, "What do you mean?" He said, "Not in that honking red coat."
As ABF set up specifically for the welfare of soldiers, veterans and their immediate family, one of the things I find impressive is about the continual push about equality. But do you think now that's in place, it's slightly overplayed, or do you think it's still a card that needs to be enforced and run home all the time?
Listen, you know, I don't think that anybody should be treated differently from anybody else. But I do believe that everybody should be treated fairly. Mm. And I think at the RSM's conference last week, I asked everybody to hold a mirror up and take a deeper look at themselves and their organisations to make sure that they're doing exactly that. So the army is absolutely in a much better place than it was when I joined 23 years ago. But we absolutely have more work to do. So, you know, equality is really important. Diversity is really important. And we just need to make sure that everybody is talking with the same voice in this.
Today, you know, we've got COVID and coronavirus. How has that affected? How has that been a challenge? Must be, you know, in terms of recruitment, training, operations, that must have caused real issues. How did you get around that?
So the army is really the only uniform service which is designed to operate and cope during crisis. The C2 structure, the command and control structure of the army has been phenomenal and has really stood up to the plate. And you know, coronavirus has allowed the army, which if you look at it, you know, the analogy of a Land Rover or any vehicle that's been running white hot for 30 years, coronavirus has allowed us to turn the engine off, to pop the bonnet, and have a look inside. And, you know, people are now looking at what...
Do you mean to say you don't first parade your vehicle every day?
Every single day, but the engine's been red hot. But now we've got it off, and we can look at bits that we maybe need to change, you know, keep, move around, etc. So that's the analogy that we use. COVID, for me personally, for all the, you know, all the horrific things it's brought, has allowed me to slow down with international travel, has allowed me to go through the world's biggest digital boot camp. And so I now feel better connected with my international partners than I did before. And selfishly, you know, I've been at home every night since March. My son was home from boarding school. So that was selfishly that was good. Operationally, yeah, it's been challenging, but the team has spun really hard to make sure that, you know, the bad people in the world haven't gone away. We still need to be able to operate, and you know, all of our men and women have done an unbelievable job, often at self sacrifice to continue to operationally deliver for our country. So I'm really proud of the way that the Army has done its business, and to our people and their families, most so.
We will, in the next general talk, be talking to two female guardsmen. How have you had to adapt things to implement the introduction of women into the frontline units, such as infantry and artillery and cavalry and the Armoured Corps?
So we haven't really done, you don't need to do a great deal. I think there's been, the females we've had come into our frontline units now has been almost seamless. You know, there's the obvious pieces with some of the ablutions and living accommodation, but hey, you know, let's not forget that we've been living and operating together on the front line for many years in Afghanistan on, you know, Herrick 11, Herrick 16, you know, two very punchy kinetic tools. I had women on the front line with me, medics, police, artillery.
I imagine that. I always thought that women must have better shots.
Well, I don't know.
I can't hit a barn door with a rifle, I can assure you, but and it was always a major problem. I always imagine that they're far more sort of, this sounds very sexist, but I hope that people understand why I say this in a light-hearted way. They're far more diligent and far more sort of comprehensive in their approach to anything, whereas us men are sort of a bit more slapdash and sort of will crack in there. And I think it would probably do a great deal to raise things in many ways, isn't you?
So having some huge success, and it's great to see. Mm. So you know, that there have been some slight changes to make sure that everybody feels comfortable. But absolutely, you know, moving forward, you know, forever we've denied ourselves all of the talent that for the front line that our females bring to our army, and I could never really understand why. Mm. And now we've got females deployed. We've got female infantry instructors now starting to come through. So
I see that even at Sandhurst now, the first Royal Signals have got the first company sergeant major as a Royal Signals warrant officer, which is fantastic news. Actually, great to see. One of the problems that the Army faces right now is that of recruiting. Do you think that the post-coronavirus, that will help Army recruiting?
So recruitment last year was very, very good. Recruitment this year is working well also. And it's because of the partnership between Capita and the British Army and how we've streamlined the way that we do business. So last year was a huge success, and this year seems to go in the same trajectory. I think it's important to note that we don't just want people because they're unemployed. We'd absolutely want people who want to come and serve their queen and country, want to be something bigger than themselves, people who want to earn while they learn, and people who want to do something which you just can't do no matter how much money you've got. So, you know, coronavirus presents instability in the civilian job market, and I'm sure that will play into us, you know, send some people our way. But we'd absolutely not want to be seen to be capitalising as an army on other people's misfortunes.
That is, I think, a very important note on which to end our time together. Army Sergeant Major, thank you so much for being my guest today on General Talk. It's been a great pleasure to talk with you and a great pleasure to meet you.
As a veteran myself, it was reassuring to see that the interests of the soldier were in such capable, level-headed and caring hands. For it is their welfare that sits at the core of ABF, the soldiers' charity. It is the debt we owe them yesterday, today, and tomorrow. If you'd like to learn more about the work of the soldiers' charity, please visit thesoldierscharity.org. With editing by Michael Stigliano, this podcast has been a GameCube production for ABF, the soldiers' charity. Ta-da! Thank you.